Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Ana Mateo in Washington. In early October, the Syrian Network for Human Rights reported that the Syrian government had dropped more than 1,700 barrel bombs from helicopters. Later in the show, we will hear some personal stories from those hurt in the attacks. But first, for a lighter story, we go to Kenya, where students are making motorbikes. There are a few words to know before listening to this story. Mild means that something is not strong in action or effect. Confident means that you are sure of yourself or your actions. Nurturing is being caring for others. And your reputation is your public image. Now here is Marcia James with the story of Kenyan students making motorbikes.
Most motorbikes used in Kenya depend on gasoline as fuel. But not this new motorbike. Its energy comes from sunlight. Three university students developed the new EcoTran bike. It captures the sun's energy, stores it in batteries, and uses it to charge the electric motor. The students have set up a fueling station for the motorbikes in Nairobi. Riders can plug the bikes into any electrical outlet. The small battery can run for 70 kilometers when fully charged. Once the power is used up, the motorbike has to return to the fueling station while another charged battery is connected to the bike. The U.S. African Development Foundation is providing financing for two solar-powered charging stations in the Kenyan port of Kisumu. Each EcoTran bike cost about $700. One motorcycle taxi operator says the new bike costs less to operate than bikes running on traditional fuel.
When it comes to buying fuel, there's no need. It's basically good for various errands. Even though you won't carry quite a heavy load, you can go with it anywhere.
A Nairobi dealership is selling the EcoTran bikes. Businessman Kennedy Kisimba hopes they will become popular.
We also know that they are more reliable compared to the gas-powered bikes. They're more efficient and they tend to last longer.
EcoTran plans to go to market with 40 bikes in 2016. I'm Marcia James.
Thanks, Marcia. After a short break, we will return to As It Is. Welcome back. I'm Ana Mateo in Washington. You are listening to As It Is. As the conflict in Syria continues, rights groups are documenting the human cost of cheap explosives. Back in early October, the Syrian Network for Human Rights said Syrian Army helicopters dropped more than 1,700 barrel bombs. Those attacks are said to have killed about 100 people, including dozens of women and children. But statistics like that do not tell everything about the bombing. Recently, reporter Jamie Detmer visited a hospital along the Syrian border with Turkey. Mario Ritter has his report.
13-year-old Ahmed and 11-year-old Nazir both survived barrel bomb attacks. The force of the explosions nearly crushed them. They suffered severe injuries. But they are alive and learning to deal with their injuries. Ahmed is partially paralyzed, unable to move anything below his chest. He has only recently started to use his hands and arms. But the rest of his body will most likely never be able to move again. Others were unable to cheer up Ahmed when he arrived at a post-operative field hospital in the Turkish border town of Kilis. The boy had just learned that his father and sister died in an explosion in Aleppo. Ahmed now can smile and show how he is able to use his hands to hold his one-year-old brother by his bedside. Ahmed's mother explains that he can now play video games on a tablet computer. Ahmed gives a thumbs up, a sign that he is feeling better. It has taken him weeks to be able to do the simple movement. It is the result of his strength and the work of the Syrian refugee doctors. The doctors work in a 47-bed hospital operated by the International Blue Crescent. The Syrian Network for Human Rights reported on the Syrian government's use of barrel bombs. First used in August 2012, they are simple devices. Oil drums or other containers filled with explosive TNT and pieces of metal. Barrel bombs also can contain fuel or even harmful gases. The United Nations Security Council condemned the use of barrel bombs in February 2014. The Syrian Network for Human Rights says almost 9,000 people have been killed in barrel bomb attacks since the UN resolution was passed. The group says 95% of those killed were civilians. About one-third were children. Nazir also was hurt in a barrel bomb explosion. Nazir grew up in the Syrian city of Homs. The 11-year-old says he was playing outside with other children when they heard an explosion. He ran into a building but was caught in a second explosion. Nazir lost his right arm, and his left was hurt badly in the explosion. Doctors at the hospital are numbed by the tragedies and wonder why, after 4 years, more has not been done in Syria. The conflict continues. Reporters say Islamic State militants want civilians to leave the town of Raqqa. The town is, reports say, faced with deadly bombing from Russian warplanes. Islamic State commanders have been preparing the town for a possible attack. The actions have put additional pressure on civilians there. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. And don't forget to visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com for more Learning English programs.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Welcome to the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. Every word has its own story. Where did it come from? How did it get into the language? Today's word is Shenandoah. Hundreds of years ago, a Native American chief named Shenandoah lived with his tribes in what is now the state of Virginia. Little is known about Shenandoah, but in some way the soft sound of his name was given to a river. The Shenandoah River still flows in a deep valley between the Allegheny and Blue Ridge Mountains, just as it did when Chief Shenandoah lived. It is a slow-moving river, soft and as beautiful as its name. There are some word experts who believe the word Shenandoah means spruce river because the waters of the river run through great forests of spruce trees. And this explanation could be correct. However, there is an old Native American story which is far more beautiful than that of the experts. Long ago, centuries before Europeans came to the New World, there was a great lake of sparkling blue water hidden in the mountains of Virginia. This lake was 250 kilometers long and 50 kilometers wide. For hundreds of years, Native American tribes lived near this lake, feeding on the fish from its clean waters. The Native Americans often climbed up the mountains and camped there during their long hunts for food. In the evenings, they sat near their camp and looked down at the beautiful lake. On a clear, starry night, you could see thousands of stars shining and dancing on the water below. The Native Americans loved this lake, and because they could see the stars in it, they called the lake Clear Daughter of the Stars. In their language, the word for this was Shenandoah. One day, there was a loud crashing sound at one end of the lake. The lake started to disappear. Its water ran out of the valley, through a break in the mountainside. The waters ran on and on until they joined another river, which today is known as the Potomac. At last, the lake was gone. In its place was only a river. It is this way today. The lake is gone, but the beautiful Shenandoah River runs on. And on a clear night, anyone in the mountains can still see the stars dancing on the water. Shenandoah National Park has just over 80,000 hectares of protected lands. The park has cascading waterfalls, beautiful mountain vistas, and serene woods. Located outside of Washington, D.C., the Shenandoah National Park is a popular getaway for people wanting to hike, picnic, or nature watch. Millions of Americans have seen the Shenandoah and have talked about it, and some years ago, someone wrote a song about it. Shenandoah is perhaps one of America's most recognizable folk songs. Some say the song refers to the river. Others say it is about the daughter of Chief Shenandoah. Regardless of what the song is about, Shenandoah remains an American classic. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Winslow Homer, considered to be the greatest American artist of the 19th century. Homer created pictures that showed the relationship between humans and nature. The strong, clear images he drew and painted matched the wild, developing, and proud United States of the late 1800s.
Winslow Homer was the second of three sons of Henrietta Benson and Charles Savage Homer. He was born in Boston, Massachusetts, in 1836, and grew up in Cambridge. His father was an importer of tools and other goods. His mother was a painter. Winslow got his interest in drawing and painting from his mother. But his father also supported his son's interest. Once, on a business trip to London, Charles Homer bought a set of drawing examples for his son to copy. Young Winslow used these to develop his early skill.
Winslow's older brother, Charles, went to Harvard University in Cambridge. The family expected Winslow would go, too. But at the time, Harvard did not teach art, so Winslow's father found him a job as an assistant in the trade of making and preparing pictures for printed media. At age 19, Winslow learned the process of lithography. This work was the only formal training that Winslow ever received in art.
Winslow did this work for about 2 years. Then the young man decided to become an independent illustrator, someone who makes drawings and pictures for a living. He worked in Boston for a few years, drawing illustrations for stories in several newspapers. He also did work for a magazine that was different from any other of the time. Harper's Weekly in New York City needed good illustrations and had lots of space for them. The young Winslow began to establish himself as an artist in demand.
In 1859, Winslow Homer moved to New York City to work for Harper's Weekly. Homer also started to paint seriously. He hoped to go to Europe to study painting. But something would intervene that would change the direction of Winslow Homer's artistic work. Harper's Magazine would send him to draw pictures of the biggest event in American history since independence. It was the Civil War between the Union and the rebel Southern states.
Winslow Homer went to Washington, D.C., in 1861. He drew pictures of the campaign of Union Army General George McClellan the next year. His pictures of the war showed the many ways that conflicts affect people. In one illustration, he showed Union soldiers on horses advancing heroically. The Southern Confederate soldiers are shown forced under the feet of the horses, while the horsemen hold their swords high. The illustration is called The War for the Union, 1862, A Cavalry Charge.
In another famous illustration, the Army of the Potomac, a sharpshooter on picket duty, Homer showed a different side of war. A soldier sitting in a tree is holding a rifle. He is aiming at a target far in the distance. Many critics say the picture shows the cold, mechanical nature of warfare, bringing death to the unsuspecting. Winslow Homer also made a famous painting called Home, Sweet Home. It shows two soldiers listening to music played by military musicians. This was common during the Civil War. At the end of the day, musicians on both sides would play to raise the spirits of soldiers. Often, they would play the song Home, Sweet Home. Homer painted two Union soldiers preparing a meal. The musicians are in the distance. The two soldiers appear to be stopped in the middle of their preparations by thoughts of home and family.
Critics widely praised Homer's work during the Civil War. His work gained him membership in what is now called the National Academy. One painting, Prisoners from the Front, was chosen to represent the United States at the Exposition Universelle. This event was held in Paris, France, in 1866. Homer went to Europe for the first time. However, little is known about his stay in Europe.
The next major change in Winslow Homer's life was a decision to work in a new medium. Until now, Homer had used oil-based paints. Colorful substances are mixed with oil. These thick paints can be spread in layers, one over another, to produce interesting effects of light and color. Oil paints are usually put on canvas cloth. Most people consider oil painting serious painting. But in the summer of 1873, Homer began using watercolor paint.
Watercolor paint is color, or pigment, dissolved in water. The paint is thin. Sometimes you can see through the paint to the paper underneath. Watercolor paint can be used to color drawings or by itself. It is a much faster medium than oil painting, but it is a different and difficult skill to learn. Homer's decision to use watercolor may have been connected with another major decision. 2 years after he started using watercolor, he stopped illustrating for magazines like Harper's. In doing so, he ended a good way to earn a living. Instead, he decided to make a living only from selling his paintings. He was completely independent, just as he said he always wanted to be.
One of Homer's best paintings from this period is called Breezing Up. It was shown for the first time in 1876. It shows three boys and a man in a small sailboat. A strong wind fills the sails. The man pulls in the sail, causing the boat to gain speed. One of the boys holds the rudder, which controls the direction of the boat. The two other younger boys hold on for the ride. Breezing Up is considered one of Homer's finest paintings. Today, it is part of the permanent collection of the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C.
In the late 1870s, experts say Homer experienced some kind of crisis. Before, he had been a very social person. But after this period, he withdrew from social activities. Some critics say he had an unhappy relationship with a woman. Whatever changed him, Homer must have felt a need to escape. He traveled to Britain in 1881. He spent most of his time in the fishing village of Cullercoats near Newcastle. There, he painted many pictures of life and events on and near the sea.
Homer returned to the United States the following year. He settled in Prout's Neck, Maine. He would call it home for the rest of his life. His brothers, Arthur and Charles, both owned houses there. It appeared that Homer withdrew from social life. He avoided visits from people wanting to meet America's greatest living painter. But Homer's later life was also filled with travel, which provided subjects for his paintings. He visited warm places, Bermuda, the Bahamas, Cuba, and the American state of Florida. He made several trips to fish and to paint. In these places, he used bright watercolor paints.
Homer also spent time in the Adirondack Mountains in New York State. There, he found rich subject matter in the people, hunters, and wildlife of the area. But now, a new subject became more important in his work. As he grew older, Homer increasingly painted subjects facing death. One of Homer's last paintings is called Right and Left. It shows two ducks that have just been shot by a hunter as they fly above the surface of a wide expanse of water. The painting is named for a hunter's trick. It describes how a hunter can use both barrels of a shotgun to bring down two birds very quickly. In the painting, the water and sky are gray. It is very early in the morning. If you look carefully at the painting, you can see two small points of the color orange. Looking closer still, you can see that one is a small part of a rising sun. The other is more surprising. It is the firing of the shotgun. Almost hidden behind one of the falling ducks is the boat carrying the hunter. Here, Homer did something very unusual. The observer of the painting is directly in the line of gunfire.
Winslow Homer died at Prout's Neck, Maine in 1910. He was firmly established as America's greatest painter of the time.
This program was written and produced by Mario Ritter. Our studio engineer was John Ellison. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.